many of you have enjoyed a lobster dinner anytime recently? A couple. All right, so how many of you have enjoyed a lobster dinner where the lobster was like the size of the platter, not the size of a plate? Couple, right? All right. The reason I ask that is my daughter Naya and I were watching a TV show this week, and in the middle of that TV show, there was in fact this couple that was enjoying such a lobster dinner. And, you know, I don't think I've ever had a lobster dinner of a lobster of that size. You know, this was not lobster thermidor where they've scooped out the meat and they've added stuff to it and then gently put it back in. This was not lobster tail where they've cut off the top so you can just scoop out meat. This was not just a little tiny lobster. This was a big-ass lobster. This is really a huge lobster. And when I was watching them going into this process of eating this lobster, I noticed a couple of things that were going on. The first thing is they stopped and they paused. They just stopped and they looked at that huge lobster and they sort of took a chance to just appreciate the amazing thing that was in front of them. Just a few verses before what Deborah read for us from Isaiah, God says, "Listen carefully to me. Eat what is good and delight yourselves in rich food." So here's some folks that are doing exactly that. They are eating themselves, eating what is good, and they are delighting in rich food. And when you think about it, it's a good practice for us, whether it's a big lobster that we're eating or not, to stop and pause in our life periodically, whether it's with the food that is in front of us, whether in fact it is the world that we wake up to or the tasks that we have been given, to stop and to pause as James says, all good gifts come to us from heaven. And so it's really important, as I was looking at it, I said, there are some truths here in the eating of this lobster to things that we should be practicing. Stopping, pausing, appreciating. But let me tell you, the reason that lobster was on the table in front of them was not just for them to stop and pause and appreciate, it was to be consumed. And here's the thing about eating a lobster, particularly one like that. It is a full-bodied experience, right? So when they are ready to get at eating that lobster, first thing that comes out is bibs, right? So people put in on bibs because they know they're about to make a mess. Forks, knives, all of that is shoved aside. Instead, there are these tools for cracking and extraction to be able to get at it, and then people just go at it with a vigor that we don't typically see in the way in which we eat, taking apart claws, pulling meat out, dipping it into butter, food coming down off of your face. It is an utterly full-bodied experience, one in which is lived with utter and total gusto. And here's the thing. I think this is exactly what God expects of us for the way in which we live our lives. For the way in which we live our lives and the way in which we live into the call that each of us have had, that it is a full-bodied experience. It is not for the indifferent. It is not for the timid. It is a call that comes to us that we are supposed to do all that we can to live in the way that God has called us to live or to do the things that God has called us to do. And I think that's part of what this very kind of strange and almost disturbing parable that was just read to us from Luke. For here is this person walking with his gardener, comes upon a fig tree, and notices that the fig is not doing what? Producing figs. What are fig trees supposed to do? Make figs. That's the full-bodied fig experience, is that you give out figs. That's what figs are created to do, and it's not doing its job. And so the person says, cut it down. It's not doing what it's supposed to be doing. Cut it down. If we're not doing what we're supposed to be doing, cut it down. And the gardener says, well, let's hold on for just a little bit. Let me give it a little bit of time. Let me see if I can work with it and let it become a fig tree doing what it's supposed to do. I was thinking about that when I walked out of our house and we have a beautiful avocado tree in our front yard. We have an avocado tree that is on its way to becoming the beauty pageant winner of all avocado trees. Full, big branches, round, and it's gorgeous. And it has 5 flowers on it right now. 5 flowers on one little clump of leaf, 5 flowers. Next door at Auntie Donna's house, Auntie Donna's house has an avocado tree that is the beauty pageant reject. Its branches go all askew. It looks like lightning must have come and cleaved it in half or something, and it is so choked full of flowers that we are going to be making guacamole, avocado toast, and anything else that I can think of for months with all the avocados that are going to come off of that tree. And I think that if this person in this parable is walking by, it takes a look at our beauty pageant avocado tree and says, cut it down. And takes a look at that ugly old avocado tree right next door and says, now there's an avocado who's doing all that it can to do what avocados are supposed to do. Full-bodied, doing it all. We are called in such a way because God did not rest when we are created. God is not indifferent when we are created. God puts sinew upon us, puts muscle upon us, puts mind and spirit into us, puts power and the ability to do all sorts of things, and does so with intentionality and has no intent for us to do anything other but to live fully into what God has created us to be, to live fully into that, just as the avocado, just as the fig tree is supposed to do, just as that lobster is there. We are supposed to embrace what God has given to us, the gifts that we have, with such utter and complete gusto, because God is particularly not interested in indifferent and temperate and timid lives of faith. Not at all. Now, Jesus tells a story, and Luke is relating this story, and there's a certain added urgency that they are dealing with in the Luke community, the Lucan community. That story is being written down probably somewhere between 1 to 2 generations after Jesus has been crucified. And they are dealing with what is this literature is known as apocalyptic literature. For Luke, they were living in an apocalyptic, say that 5 times really fast, an apocalyptic community, meaning that their understanding of the world is that the world had gone so askew, had gone so far off base, that God was going to act and act very soon to bring things back, and that there would be a cataclysmic moment that would be the time in which God is ushering in a new world. So for the Lucan community, living fully into what God has called you to be has a certain urgency. And so when Jesus tells this rather strange set of stories of the absolute brutality of the Roman Empire, that Pontius Pilate has taken these Galileans and has taken their blood and has mixed their blood with the sacrifices that are going on, and then this utter horrible reality that has happened where a tower has fallen down and 18 people have died in the collapsing of that tower. And Jesus asks the question and he says, do you think that these people, it was the sins of their fathers that caused this? Were they more sinful than anyone else? Or as we hear oftentimes now, do you think this is God calling them home because in the midst of the tragedy, God just really wants them to be there? Jesus asks these questions that we know as theodicy, as the present, as the understanding, what do we understand evil? And what Jesus is actually pointing to is the fact that life is utterly unpredictable. Abraham Heschel, the Jewish theologian, said this. He said, the course of life is unpredictable. No one can write their autobiography in advance. None of us. I mean, I look out here and I see brilliant people. I see people that can do amazing things, and here's the truth that we know. Stuff happens. Bad stuff happens. And we have virtually no control over stuff happening. What we have control of is how we live our lives. But life can be short, and life can be unpredictable and hard, and that's the reality that they're dealing with. But it's not because God is punishing. That's just the reality of life. But if you live in a world where you are expecting that the world is going to come to an end and God is going to come in and usher in a new world, it's pretty important that every day you be on the right side of things. Because since life is in fact unpredictable, you don't want to be caught up short when God comes in that apocalyptic moment. And so for the people of Luke's community, they take very seriously what Jesus is saying. And they take very seriously the way in which he takes that parable and adds it together, because in that parable he's saying, get going, do what it is you have been called to do, because you cannot predict what is going to happen. And they understood it. This seemed like an apocalyptic moment. I mean, here it is, Jesus, their leader, their Messiah, dead, had been killed by the Roman Empire. The second temple of the Jewish people had been destroyed by the Roman Empire. The Roman Empire was more ascendant in power than any empire before its time. They could understand that this could, in fact, be the end of the world, and God would be coming in to bring in something new. And so what Jesus is saying to them is, make a choice. Make a choice in your life. Make choices in your life. If your choice is to live by the ways of the empire, live by ways of death and destruction, live by ways of power and control, understand there are consequences to those choices. If instead your choice is to live timidly, to live indifferently, that is not what you are called to. Elie Wiesel, a number of years ago, wrote, "The opposite of love is not hate, it is indifference. The opposite of art is not ugliness, it is indifference. The opposite of faith is not heresy, it is indifference. And the opposite of life is not death, it is indifference. Because of indifference, one dies before one actually dies." Jesus is challenging very seriously the folks in that community to live like that fig tree is being challenged to live. Do what it is you have been created to do. Live fully. Live in love. Live justly. Make peace. Those are the things we are created to do. And if we are timid about it, if we are indifferent about it, we are not doing that which we have been called to do. And in this story, cut it down. If we are not fully engaged with the life and the work that we are called to do, take it out. Those are harsh and difficult realities. You understand it from the Luke community, why that was so important to them. If you are expecting the apocalypse, you better get on the right side. But here we are 2,000 years later, and the apocalypse apparently never came. The four horsemen of the apocalypse didn't come riding in. That cataclysm that Luke and Paul and others was expecting didn't come. So does it make a difference? Does it make a difference that the apocalypse didn't come in terms of the way in which we live? And my answer is absolutely not. What difference does that make? For we are all in the process of choosing what side that we are on. We are always in the process of choosing to live as God has called us to live. We are always in that. And to do anything other than that is to instead choose to live life timidly, choose to live life indifferently, choose to live life ignorant of the gifts that God has given to us, choose to eat that lobster and try and do it with a fork and knife. Can't be done. Has to be done full-bodied, full immersion of yourself into the task of life. And what I love about the story that Jesus gives to us of the fig tree is that it is not the fig tree alone that has to do it. So when God says, when this master walks by and sees that the fig tree is not producing, and the gardener says, give me some time, let me help it. And one can assume the gardener does not act as an independent agent, then in fact there are other gardeners that are there. Let me dig around its roots a little bit. Let me see if I can get some air. Let me see if I can help this one to do what it's supposed to do. Let me put some manure into the ground to help it become what it's supposed to do. This is a community. This is a community that we are called to. And so when we are called to live life fully, we are called to do that as individuals, but in particular, we are called as we are into a community of faith working together. A community of folks that have committed themselves to follow in the ways of this carpenter from Nazareth. A community that is committed to that together. And so that's why we started our service. We started our service with reading our covenant again, which we've done a couple of times already since it was passed again. Think about the words. First of all, the covenant is what we, members of the church, commit to. That's not a timid word, to commit to it. We strive, it says. We aspire. We affirm. We welcome all. We are a just peace church. We honor. Those are words of action. Those are words of engagement. Those are words that are not words of indifference. Those are words of our utter play into interaction with all that God has called us to here in this community of faith. And then there are a group of us that are beginning to play with a strategic plan, not creating the strategic plan, but planning how to have a strategic plan so that we as a congregation can begin to define together who it is that we say we are, what it is that we are about. And think about that reality. We are here in this community. We are here, right here in this Mo'ili'ili Makiki community, Manoa, Mo'ili, Makiki, and there's one other 4M. Right, what is it? Manoa, thank you. No, I miss it. Manoa. Makali, thank you so much. So nice of you to help me out there. We're in the middle of this community, and all we have to do is walk 100 yards or even be here at night, and we recognize that there are a lot of folks right here in our community who do not have homes. We don't need to step very far. Family Promise will certainly help us to understand that in the very next week when we are hosting 3 families there. We don't have to step very far to recognize that there are many in this community that may have a home but may not be able to hold on to that home next month or the following month, that resources are that tight. We are in a community just below the University of Hawaii in which studies tell us about 50% of the students at the University of Hawaii are operating from a place of food insecurity. They are not getting enough nourishment in their life. We are in a community, a larger community here on Oahu. So when Cheryl shares with us that story this morning, that has such vile things happening in which people are putting out bumper stickers that say, eliminate Micronesians, that is a scary community that needs people of faith to be entering into. We are a community without offshore monies coming in, investing, and taking our dollars and not keeping them here in the community, but sending them far away to pad somebody else's pockets instead of serve the community. We are a community that is dealing with all sorts of issues related to climate, our mountains and our shores and our reefs. We are a community in need that is in need of our full engagement. And so we together say our covenant of who we commit ourselves to be, full-bodied. We work together to create a strategic plan of who we are as the people of Christ, as the beloved community right here, to say what shall we be and how shall we be in this community. We are called to full-bodied engagement. We are not called to come to church on Sunday morning for an hour and a half and that be the end of our life of faith until the next Sunday. It is something that takes us every day of our life in community with one another as well. It is a full-bodied and joyous and wonderful engagement that God calls us to. Now, for just a moment, though, realize that when you're having that lobster feast and you have first stopped and you have sat in appreciation of all God's good gifts that are before you, and then you have full-bodied thrown yourself into the eating of that lobster, and when the lobster is consumed, we watched on TV as these people went through that lobster feast, there was a third thing that happened. And that third thing that happened was they pushed back from the table just a little bit. And similar to the beginning, at the end, they sat back in appreciation of the gifts that had come to them. And they allowed those gifts to become a part of their life. If we are a people that is all about action, if we are a people that is all about how can we full-bodied engage with this community, and we don't give ourselves time for appreciation both before and after, then we will burn ourselves out. The life of a spiritual person is a life that has a life of prayer and a life of activity. And we are called when it is time to be active, to be fully engaged. And we are also called when it is time to be contemplative and prayerful, to be fully engaged. As Isaiah says, God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, my ways are not your ways, but they are what we aspire to. And we must give ourselves time for that aspiration. We must be tilling the inner soil of ourselves in order to be fully the gardeners in this community. So in this time of Lent, in this time that for many people is a time of reflection and introspection, I want to ask you all to be reflecting on, who are we, full-bodied community of Christ, right here, Church of the Crossroads, called to be, and how shall we be? And then I want to ask you as well, and what shall I do for myself and with one another to make sure that I do not burn out in that engagement, but instead that I find the way to constantly feed my inner soil so I can be the gardener in this community that God has called us to be. Amen.